doesn't pay.
Bernie's right, and I was listening to Reverend Barber. They're both right. What we wanted to highlight in this strike was not only our plight, but that most of the workers, the essential workers that people pass by every day providing the services for all the rest of the folks, are not getting a fair deal in this society. They're making barbers, they're making $14, $13, $12, in other states, $7. The better paid jobs are getting $18, $19, $20, $21, $22. And none of those folks, a dollar to some people seems not much, but I can count on my hands how many times a worker who makes less than $25 an hour, which is the vast majority of people in this country, receive a dollar an hour wage.
We just have 10 seconds. As essential workers, are people at Hunter's point, at Hunt's Point, are they prioritized for a vaccine?
Yeah, they are now. We're in the second phase, according to the guidelines, as essential work.
Well,
it's supposed to be rolling out soon.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us. Daniel Kane, president of Teamsters Local 202, which organized the nearly week-long Hunts Point market strike that ended in victory this weekend. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Remember, wearing a mask is an act of love.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8 a.m. It's Monday. Stay tuned for more talk radio with Cecil and or Celeste. Keep it locked here on your Community Connection.
Good morning. It is morning, isn't it? I'm not sure.
It is morning in some parts of the world.
Okay. Shucks. Okay. I'm in the circle of life, so to me it's just awake. Night and day don't seem to be relevant anymore. Is anybody else doing that?
It seems that way.
Yep. But
whether you're awake or partially asleep, and whether you're listening live or on recording, you are listening to More Talk Radio with Cecil. I'm Cecil. And
I think I'm Celeste.
Okay.
I'm some version of her. Let's put it that way. And the only reason I'm saying that like that is because I have a new title. It's called Raging Insomniac.
Yes. One of those.
Yes, indeed.
So if you're awake, if you're listening live, this is Monday, the 25th of January.
2021.
Or, as some people might characterize it, is the first Monday without Donald Trump as President of the United States.
And I think that's significant in many ways. although I don't think we know how significant it's going to be yet. I don't think we have a clue yet how important it is, because we're still dealing with so much fallout that has occurred, you know.
Yeah. And that fallout, in part, I think, is manifested in our public life and his influence and ability to speak in a certain way and somehow change the political discourse, which is manifested not only on the national scene, but also on a more local scene in terms of political discourse. So why don't you explain what we are talking about?
Well, we have two scenarios here. One of them is local, and it has to do with a certain Clackamas County commissioner. And he made some very racist statements, and I believe he felt comfortable making these statements because of the kind of climate that that Trump has engendered. You know, he felt comfortable, and I think he felt comfortable being himself. That's the thing, you know. So when he was called out for it, what he decided to do instead of resigning was to apologize. And I guess his idea was that, well, you know, okay, I got caught, so I need to straighten this out real quick, and I need to apologize, and I need to have people believe me that I've seen the light and changed my ways. And so he's refused to walk back his position. He's refused to quit. And I guess the question then would be, really, how do we feel about that? You know, should he resign? Really, should he resign? Should he be allowed to demonstrate that he has had a change of heart and be allowed to continue to represent people, especially people who he's denigrated and talked very badly about? And this commissioner is Mark Scholl, and he's been censured by his body, you know, by the board that he's on. The Clackamas County District Attorney has called for him to quit. People have gotten up and spoken to him and said, okay, this is not acceptable. But like I said, he's gotten up and said, well, I'm sorry, I messed up. And my question is, go ahead, Cecil.
No, I was just going to say, you know, the nature of his insult and his posts on social media have been extensive. It isn't as if he stumbled and made a mistake in one conversation. He has targeted Muslim people of color. He has targeted trans folks. He has targeted immigrants, spreading misinformation about COVID and glorifying violence. And, you know, you may go to recallmarkscholl.com, where it highlights some of the remarks he has made and posted. And of course, these aren't posts that he made, you know, when he was a 13-year-old kid. These are posts he has made over the years, up until he got caught a few weeks ago when people have highlighted the post on social media. He has since, I believe, taken down his Facebook page. But as you mentioned, people have called for his to resign, his fellow commissioners, as well as social and organizations within the county, and organizations such as CARE and others who have called his positions and the things he have said intolerable and need to resign. And as you suggested, Celeste, he has not resigned. So where do we go from here? And what go ahead.
Well, you know, is this a forgivable issue? What does forgiveness look like in a case like this? Because, you know, we have to look at how people during Trump's presidency have changed in their consciousness as and changed in how they are aware of things, and we're going to have to deal with people waking up, so to speak, and realizing, some of them, that they've been duped or hypnotized or mesmerized by people like Trump and like Scholl, and they're going to ask for forgiveness. And we need to figure out what that even looks like. You know, is that something that can happen when you've had such a major erosion of trust? And he has trust. He has our capital, our political trust, you know, our social trust, and he's eroded it. And another thing that's come out of this whole experience with Trump is a current division that's forming and showing its head. And basically, I'm just going to kind of illustrate that by asking a simple question. Who should get the COVID shot right now? Who should be the one getting the shot? If you're in the 1A group, you are a teacher or a healthcare worker or a emergency responder, you know, somebody who is very deeply, obviously, an essential worker. But right now, people are pushing for things like putting kids back in school. Now, at first, that didn't make a lot of sense until you remember that young people are as dependent upon their peer social networks as they are air and water. And if you don't believe that, you must not have raised any children, you know, especially no children in the last, 15 years, because it's just become so apparent how much their peers mean to them, how much peer pressure affects them, how much peer support, you know, helps them stay healthy and helps them stay viable. So it makes sense that maybe kids go back to school. But then you have people saying things like, well, we want them to play sports too, full contact sports, because, well, they need the sports. They need to be able to make these memories. And I was thinking to myself, this guy says, and they can comply with all of the health and safety regulations, you know, around social distancing and wearing masks and things like that. And I'm thinking to myself, full contact sports, COVID, compliance, I don't see how that can happen. So what, you don't tackle, you just come within 6 feet and say, I see you, drop the ball, you know? It's not making sense, you know? But then also, you have people who are concerned because they have health complications. and they want to live as long as they can a healthy life, or at least not die from COVID. And so, you know, what's happening is we have a lot of people clamoring for their right to get the shot. And I'm just curious, is, you know, as long as you're not blatantly racist and stupid, or, you know, you're not being rude to people, there's no wrong answer, you know, but pick one of those. Pick one of those. You don't have to comment on both of them, so we can get more people in. And give us a call at 503-231-8187 here for more talk radio on your community connection, KBOO Portland.
And to add a little bit more background about the second question we pose in terms of eligibility for COVID vaccine. One that we're just discovering now is that the anticipated rollout of vaccine as it's not going as swiftly as possible, and the supplies of vaccines are at a point where they have to increase manufacturing them. So it's a limited number of supplies right now. Here in Oregon and throughout the states, people are grouped in different categories. So right now, group phase 1A is, as Celeste told us, well, hospital staff, urgent care workers, skilled nursing, those in doing health care, those in long-term care facilities. And that totals about 400,000 people approximately who will be grouped in the phase 1A. And now it becomes much more difficult. Group phase 1B. And those listed group one is child care providers, early learning and K-12 educators and staff. Then group two is people 80 and older. Then group three is people 75 and older. Group four is 70 and older. Group five is 65 and older. Now, you know, why should my group is listed where they are? Well, in Oregon, there are about 105,000 educators, and there are 795,000 people over the age of 65. So, you know,
the math. Do the math, and then also, the stockpile that we were supposed to have does not exist. So there's a limited amount of shots. And then here's yet another overlay. Well, what if you're BIPOC? What if you're Black, Indigenous, or a person of color, and you're only 64, but you have limited access to health? What should you do? You know, and people are even saying, well, is it legal to even consider it, you know, consider a person's ethnic status? And, you know, as far as health access and health disparities, you know, it's not a matter of legality. It becomes a matter of equity. So, you know, we've got a whole lot of overlays. We're trying to figure out who gets the shot. Washington might seem to have made a good decision, but they have created the same kind of logjam, and that they said, okay, we're just going to open it up to anybody who is in this cohort, and you can get the shot. But the problem is they don't have enough vaccines to actually cover everybody in that particular cohort. So they're in the same situation we are. They just framed it differently. Who gets the
shot? Our number is 503-231-8187. And we have some people online. So let's speak with Dave.
Good morning, Dave.
Yes. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Yes. I called before. You know, we have a healthcare system, and when you deal with, like, with prescription drugs and stuff like that, like on TV, you can go, most of them go after what's called the symptoms. They treat the symptoms. Very few of them, and none of them hardly, go after what's really causing the problem. Like if it's a headache, you know, except if it's a toothache or something, you know what it is. But if you don't, nobody really goes after what's causing that headache. They just take some pain reliever, it's gone, and they feel okay. Now, if we have this kind of system where we're just treating the symptoms, I think it's going to make it hard for, like, Medicare for All and that kind of stuff. And this
okay, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about who should get the shot, not the marketing of it, not, you know, the fact that it's not necessarily even a cure, but more of, preventative effort, you know, because you're right. We've had this conversation before, you know, when you called. But I'm curious, you know, who do you think should get the shot?
This is pertaining to the vaccine. Do you really like Johnson & Johnson and all these big companies, big pharmaceutical companies?
Okay, but I understand what you're saying, but let's get to the point rather than to kind of hit it from the circular route. So could you speak more directly to the point, the question?
Okay, will you answer me one question? Should everybody be entitled to know everything what's in these vaccinations? If you're going to take them,
That's not the question, sir. I do appreciate what you're bringing up. I do. But that's not what we're asking.
I'll call some other time.
Okay, thank you. It's not like he doesn't have a valid point, you know, because that's one of the challenges a lot of people have. It's like, I don't know what's in it. I don't know if I want to take it. And a lot of BIPOC and a lot of immigrants, a lot of Americans, period, regardless of, you know, their immigration status or their ethnic status, are leery of taking the shot because they don't know what's in it, you know. But that's not the question we're asking today. That's a valid question.
And
period.
Given, yes, it is. But as we, you know, struggle with access to the vaccine, and it's a existential question for people right now. So I am 75 years old, and, you know, everything I've seen saying that we are most vulnerable. Well, shouldn't we be first in line? The neighbor said, well, I'm a teacher, and our children haven't been able to socialize together, and that we really need to get kids back in school into a good learning environment. Shouldn't I get my shot? Now, their neighbor says, well, you know, I'm a native person, and our communities are being ravaged by COVID. Shouldn't we be first in line? And how do we decide? Give us a call in your thoughts, 503-231-8187, and let's go to Merrick, who is on the line.
Good morning.
Morning.
So what's on your mind? What are you thinking?
Quite honestly, I don't think anybody should be taking this vaccine.
I'm listening.
Well, the reason is it's because it has not been properly tested, and
Tested, what do you mean? Because, you know, people will argue that it has been. What do you mean?
Well,
by
they did not go. They did not go through any of the animal trials with any of these COVID vaccines, and you know, that is the first thing that they should be doing. None of the actual testing that they should have done that has been a prerequisite for all other vaccines was not done in this case. It was rolled out, you know, as an emergency measure, so all that was bypassed. So,
and what are your sources for this? Because I'm checking right now. I want to make sure we get people the right information. So what are your sources for the no animal testing for COVID?
There was a number of doctors. I know one of them, I believe, is Dr. Andrew Kaufman. Another one is, what is her name? Her last name is Gold. I cannot remember her first name offhand. You can look on a number of websites. One of them would be like alt.censored. Let's see. You could also find some information on davidicke.com. You could find some information on thecrowhouse.com. So there's a number of avenues that you could look at. And another reason I would not provide this vaccine for anybody is because it is genetically modifying the recipients. It is a mRNA vaccine.
Okay, but that's not the question we're asking right now. I hear what you're saying, you know.
So Merrick, you on part of this the argument about who should go first, and so you will gladly step aside and whoever's in front of you will get the vaccine.
You're asking me who should go first, and I'm responding by saying that I would not allow any member of our society to go first because
any human being genetically.
Thank you. Part of the things, you know, when you asked Merrick, and he cited a slew of websites, and that's a whole other question for me in terms of accuracy and in terms of information, and anyone can create a website and people can you know cite those as sources. But let's put that aside for another day. I mean, part of the conversation that happened today is the existential angst that people are struggling with about the healthcare and who should which group should be first in line for the vaccine.
According to what I'm reading here, and I'm looking at what some people might consider propaganda, but it's FDA authorization from Pfizer, and this is the AP News version first. Hold on. It says that Pfizer and Moderna did not skip the animal trials. And then Americans for Medical Progress said that the critical role of animals in developing the COVID-19 treatment and vaccines, it says that it was tested on mice and macaque monkeys. So, you know, some people say that it was rushed through and it wasn't tested on animals at all. And I understand that, but I'm kind of like you, Cecil, in that let's focus on this existential question more so than the others, because even if all of our concerns had been met with testing, with purity, with stabilizing elements, with whether or not they use allergens, you know, or other elements that people could be allergic to in vaccines, like I am, I'm allergic to some vaccines, the question still is, I need it. I want it. I want to travel. I want to see my grandkids. I want to go to school. I'm just a teenager. I want to play sports. I'm a young person. I teach your kids, and I know how these young kids are feeling. Some of them are suicidal. They want to go back to school. You know, who gets it? Who gets the shot? And how do we, how are we determining this? Because given the blatant disregard for human beings and their worth that's been demonstrated by our past president, I think our ability for compassion has changed. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And that's why I'm asking this question, because when you have people who have stormed our national capital and either got themselves hurt or they hurt other people and they spread COVID, because people are not even paying attention to that, there's been more cases because of that, you know, we see that we don't care about people like we used to. How do we know that we don't care? I'm not going to wear a mask, y'all. Hey, I'm sorry. I'm coming into your store to shop, and I'm not wearing a mask. Or you can't come into my store and shop because you're wearing a mask. I mean, look at where we are. We've forgotten what common courtesy and love and care for each other looks like.
And that's also manifested not only in talking about the health crisis we are in, but locally, what's happening with the county commissioner of Clackamas. On January 14th, Commissioner Shaw refused to step down despite all four board members requesting his resignation. And he has stated in many different ways racist, anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant, and comments of other marginalized groups, and yet he remains a part of the governing apparatus in Clackamas County. Although, you know, he was just began, you know, a few weeks ago, but you know, yet they are calling forth. Should he resign? Should he be recalled? Should he be forgiven? And also the other question is in terms of COVID vaccines. How should we decide who should get it first, who should get it second, and who should get it third? You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your KBOO radio. I am Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey, and if you're not here in the Portland metropolitan area, you're listening at 91.9 down in Corvallis and Philomas, or at, did I flip that? Yes, I did. I'm in 91.9 if you're in Hood River. There we go. Oregon or White Salmon, Washington. If you're in Corvallis or Albany, it is 104.3. And of course, if you're listening somewhere else in the world or up in outer space or down in the ocean, it was probably at KBOO.FM. I bet you.
I bet you. You are all right. So give us a call, 503-231-8187. Fabulous engineer Sonia will answer the phone and allow you to come on air. At the same time, Sonia is multitasking. Sonia is sending me documents about COVID and all sorts of things. So Sonia's a very talented person, especially since she slept all day yesterday. It has been up since 3:30 a.m. So let's go to Ross, who is on the line. Ross, good morning.
Good morning, Cecil. Good morning, Celeste. God bless you both. Yeah, hey, oh, I'm glad you got on this topic of the who should get the vaccine first and et cetera and what priority. I tell you, I almost fell off my chair listening to the governor when I learned that they're going to put put children in the schools while they're going to let those children go run around and get the disease, and then go home to their homes and give the disease to their senior family members. It is a death sentence. It is a death sentence for, you know, this disease is remarkable for the, it's not so unusual, many diseases are like this, but this disease is remarkable in that it does, it affects with a high degree of mortality the aging population. And
that's true.
And they know that the major transmission, important transmission, takes place within the home. So yeah. So you have these children who are staying home, and now if you could take the children and not have them go back home, that'd be one thing. But if you take the children and they go out there and they're going to the disease, even if they have, now if they have the most contagious version of the disease in our population, which it is, they are certain to get the disease, and then they'll go home to their homes. Well, which homes have the highest concentration of people? Which ones have the condition so you could isolate the eldest family members? Only the rich. The poor, who lives in houses with five or six people, and who these children will come home and they'll have to bring grandma and grandpa their afternoon snacks because they're bedridden. They'll be dead within a week. And so I think this is just horrendous. And I think I know, for example, my wife, who's 95 years old, she can't apply, I don't think, until the 8th of February or so. Meanwhile, right. Thank goodness I'll keep her protected. But that's not so in other families. In fact, I'm just terribly afraid for her. And so that's my thought. But I'm going to consider a recall movement against the governor on this account, because it shows such gross inattention to the concerns of the elderly, well, of the entire population. Nobody wants their grandma dead.
All right.
That is true.
So this is a very real question and struggle. I appreciate you mentioning how people are living together and family structures, and I think it was insightful because, you know, the argument back to you is that, well, we'll have the teachers will be vaccine and childcare providers so that we can get our children back into a learning situation. But as you so wisely reminded us, that many children will go home and possibly spread the virus to older members. And your wife is in phase 1B, and she will come after childcare providers and teachers. So thank you for sharing and your thoughts, Ross, this morning.
You have grandma in the nursing home. She's been vaccinated. If you don't have money, you keep grandma on the sofa over there in the living room.
That's true. Or in her bedroom at your house, if you're fortunate to have that much space. Yep. So thank you for your call and for sharing your concerns and for, you know, putting a real face on what we're dealing with here. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. I'm Celeste Carey with my cohort here, Cecil Prescott. The phone number is 503-231-8187. And we're talking about who gets the shot. And one of the reasons why, you know, we're talking about this is because it's hard to talk about. You know, it's very personal. It's very in your face for a lot of people. And we try to take some of the very basic common, what's in your life right now element sometimes, and bring them to a place where we can share them. Sometimes they might be really divisive and difficult subjects, and sometimes they seem easy enough on the face of it until you get to discussing all the elements of it, kind of like with our first two callers. They wanted to say, well, I don't know what's in that shot. Maybe nobody should take it. Or maybe Big Pharma is lying to us about the whole thing anyway. You know, and it's not like those are necessarily just conspiracies. Now, I'm not saying that they are or aren't. I'm saying those are points for another discussion, because they are things that we have talked about before, and they are problems that have surfaced and manifested themselves before. But it's not necessarily what we're talking about today. So join in the conversation, though.
You know, I would be interested if people have some comments or reflection on the Clackamas County commissioners. I've just been reading some of his posts, and like we said, these are things he wrote 50 years ago when he was a young child, but things that are written, you know, in the last few months, these anti-immigrant comments and anti-Muslim comments, and to be sure, he went before a group of religious leaders and did a mea culpa before them. But is that enough? Is that enough? And does it reveal, and is he reveal a true transformation, or is he doing this because it's politically convenient for him? What is necessary for people to change, and what do we require of those who are public officials? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And Celeste, what do you think in terms of how much should people repent or turn around, or what is required of them, and why is it, why do we really care what he thinks if he's doing his job?
Well, he can't do his job based on what he thinks, because let's just take an issue close at hand, like who gets the shot. Mm-hmm. If he has these attitudes about folks of color, about Muslims, about you know, everybody that he's illustrated in his writings and his blogs, then you can't trust him to administer a resource properly. How can he make amends to me? You know, maybe by only stepping down and supporting somebody who has a better track record of meeting the needs of the people he's supposed to serve. You know, there are some things that are hard to forgive. There are things that are difficult to forgive, like when you demonstrate that you're not trustworthy, that my trust in you to administer to our needs has been eroded. Now, I know, you know, all of our faith communities would say, well, you should forgive, but you should also demonstrate that you are worthy of that forgiveness. And so, you know, the question then is, what can he do? What can he do to make amends? And I think maybe he should be wise enough to withdraw from the position and humble himself and get into a position where he actually has not a lot of power, but he can utilize the ability to directly serve people. Maybe he needs to go serve meals. Maybe he needs to wash some feet. Maybe he needs to go teach some children and teach them good values. but, you know, maybe he needs to go to one of these nursing homes and serve there. But to demonstrate the kind of misanthropic attitudes he's got, he doesn't get to serve from that high of a position. He doesn't get to be an exalted leader, because he's blown it. He's shown us that he's not capable. He ain't qualified.
Okay. Well, it's good to hear that you you have a thought about this. In the meantime, let us speak with Felicity, who has some words of wisdom, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Felicity, for saving me.
I am actually going back to the earlier topic of vaccines, and I just wanted to make a comment that even though in the vaccine sequencing plan, contract workers are specifically mentioned, thus far the distribution has been kind of difficult in terms of the inclusion of contract workers. I personally am a healthcare interpreter, so over the course of a day, I might work at several different hospitals, but I'm not an employee of any of those hospitals. So while I'm having that contact with those patients, I've even worked at COVID-19 testing sites. Because I'm not an employee, it's been very difficult to access the vaccine. And so I think that there really needs to be more attention paid. I'm seeing that now, finally, they're starting to do some community events, like at the convention center, which hopefully there will be a way that contract workers can access those. But I'm thinking not just of other healthcare interpreters, but folks like cleaning staff who perhaps are contract workers, or others who are being sent to the hospitals by an agency but are not employees themselves, who still have that same risk of exposure.
So am I hearing you right to say that even though you are serving among that same cohort that's eligible now, you can't get the shot?
Yeah.
So has anybody addressed this big gap, or are you having to advocate for yourself and hope somebody pays attention?
The latter.
Oh, that's scary. So that's a big gap in our so-called security coverage then. Do you know, have any idea why it's that way? Is it simply just because you're contract workers, or are you, you know, is there anyone beside you that is noticing this and pushing for it?
Yeah, I believe it's because the way the vaccine is being distributed, it's being given to the hospitals, and then the hospitals
are
giving it to their staff, which, according to OHMA, should include contract workers, but in all practicality, that's not what's happening. For example, I've reached out to both Providence and Legacy and haven't been able to get much of a response on how they plan to distribute it to contract workers like myself.
Wow. You know, I don't necessarily advocate for other media on KBOO, but this sounds like something that you might call, like, KGW has a hotline that has people who are supposedly standing by to give you information about the vaccine and to keep you updated. I don't have that number handy, but I bet you could find it online or at their on their website. But I would call them and say, hey, we need some help here. Does anybody notice that there's a big gap in this coverage, you know? And it would be beneficial for everybody if you all get the shots. Have you considered something like that?
Yeah, I haven't. I've reached out to OHA, is who I've reached out to, but I think it's important because as an interpreter, we're serving the folks that already are at higher risk. We're serving folks with disabilities if we're for sign language interpreters, and then we're serving immigrants and people of color if we're interpreters of other languages.
Right, and you're in the hospital, so you become a vector.
We're in the hospital, we're right next to the patient. I mean, and like I said, these are the patients who already are at increased risk.
Right. And see, it's not really said a lot, but when you get your shot, even if you've had the second shot and your body hasn't fully adapted to the vaccine, you can still catch COVID. You know, and people are not really paying attention to that. So if the healthcare workers have had their first shot and there's somebody in there trying to interpret and they become a vector of the disease, that means that you might catch it or give it, the patient might catch it or give it, and the healthcare worker who's been vaccinated, if their body has not adapted to it, can still catch it. So, yeah, I would call KDW and let them know and kind of make a big deal about it. And I call the hospitals, too.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
And thank you so much for your work.
Yes.
Wow.
I know. I'm just like, oh, gosh. How do you, you know, that's part of being an adult. And a human being, you know, is trying to fix things. But when you see a gaping hole and you're thinking, how do we miss that? You know, that's a sobering moment. That just lets you know that, well, we're adults, but that doesn't mean we're infallible. Wow.
No. It reflects in terms of our societal structure and how we value different people, different groups. And where are our priorities? So, if you're a contract worker, if you're not unionized, if you're depending upon private health institutions, many things will fall and be missed. And what Felicity shared with us was clear evidence of people who are doing valuable work but are unable to get the health care they need so that they can provide good care for us. Earlier, Ross called and mentioned the vulnerability of the very oldest members of our society. What does it mean if they are living in close proximity with relatives, when you have, 5, 6, 7, 8 people all living under one roof, how do we protect and keep them safe? So there are many gaps in our healthcare system that this crisis is unveiling for many of us, and maybe it may be a prompt for the president who is. I'm against Medicare for All, might change his tune as he seeks to roll out the vaccines for this virus.
Well, good. You know, one of the things that he is doing, which I think is a good thing, is, I want to call it the Wartime Production Act. I can't remember it exactly,
right.
But he's invoking that to step up the production, and we need that because apparently Trump didn't. I mean, he threatened to do that, but he never actually did it. There we go. Took me a moment to mute it.
Okay.
So it is 8:53. Is that time right? Am I? Yeah. Oh, 52. Okay, I'm a minute ahead. Stay tuned. We have coming up the Oboe Variety Hour and lots more good information that you can use. And also, if you like having an opportunity to share your opinions, you know, via talk radio and connect with your community, support KBOO Radio.
How can you do that? Well, you can go to kboo.fm, our website, and look up there in the corner, and it says that you can support us financially. You can give. You can donate. And do that for us, and keep us strong and keep us connected to you and you connected to the rest of the community. Yeah, it's really easy.
And Angela is waiting to share with us, so let's speak with Angela. Good morning.
Good morning, Angela.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for your show. I just wanted to piggyback off of the last caller about the kind of inefficient rollout of the vaccines. I'm a healthcare provider, too. I'm an acupuncturist, but I'm in contact with other modalities of care. And I know many, many providers of care that are not affiliated with hospitals who have not yet had their first vaccine dose. I fortunately was able to advocate for myself. It was very, very difficult to get my first dose, but it's really unclear when my second dose will be because we're currently out. So I know there's a lot of talk among, you know, about who should be prioritized and all of those things. And I of course have opinions about that, but I just want people to know that it's kind of a moot point at this point because the vaccine supply has been, you know, interrupted. And, you know, the people in phase 1A, the healthcare workers, aren't all vaccinated with their first dose. So that's where we're at. And it's really unfortunate. I really believe that the Oregon Health Authority, I go to bi-monthly meetings for COVID-19 for healthcare practitioners through the OHA. And I've just seen them not plan, not efficiently plan at all. They didn't hire enough contact tracers. They had months to do it. And again, with this vaccine rollout, you know, they basically waited for the hospitals to volunteer their services to set up the thing at the convention center. It's very unclear how to schedule it. It's just, it's a huge mess here. And I know it's not that way in other states because I'm in contact with professionals in other states as well as educators. My mother-in-law's an educator in Connecticut, and I just want people to know that hopefully with the DPA being used, the supply chain will get rectified, and then we won't have to be talking so much about who gets to go first and who's gonna, you know, the vulnerable people amongst us and educators and all of that. So but, you know, right now it's not there. And I really don't have a lot of faith in the Oregon Health Authority's organizational ability, unfortunately. But I will say for healthcare providers out there, though, Kaiser at least will put you on a waiting list, even if you're not a member, even if you're not an employee or a member.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, and part of the problem is that the hospitals they vaccinated even their employees that don't interact with patients, even people who are working remotely. So those people got prioritized before even people that are working, you know, close up with patients. And that was a bit of a problem.
Right. Now, that's an interesting situation that the remote workers would qualify because, I mean, just the title, remote worker.
Yeah. It's just
should indicate you don't.
The hospitals were given the authority. They were just given the doses, and they decided to go ahead and vaccinate all their employees first. So that's what happened.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, if many people can, call the Oregon Health Authority, call the hospital, you know, if you can, and just, you know, get information about how they can do outreach to the public, because I don't even know how they're keeping track of which healthcare workers have, you know, access or have been vaccinated, or, you know, I don't even know. So,
yeah.
Well, those are good points, and thank you for bringing them to our attention.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much for what you do. I really appreciate what you do with the social justice lens and the racial equity lens. It's so important, and you guys are just solidly here for us all. I really appreciate you.
Well, thank you. That helps us stay strong.
Yeah, thank you so much. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year. Thank you.
So, hopefully, with the president using the Defense Production Act, that there will be an increase in the boost production of the vaccines. maybe state health authorities may get their act together so that they may find a better way to roll out the vaccines. And in the meantime, I am grateful for those who are on the front lines, whether they are working in hospitals or supplying our food. We need to be there for one another at all times. We are approaching the end of our program. Sonia says we have 90 seconds.
Well, thank you very much, everybody who's called. Thank you, everyone who has supported KBOO Radio. And thank you all for being concerned with each other's well-being and health, because that's the only way we're going to keep thriving and surviving. We'll hear from you and talk to you next week here on your Community Connection, KBOO, and More Talk Radio. Bye, Cecil.
Bye.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.